It's a moral and ethical question for me. Do we really need this much packaging? What's recyclable? What's not? Is any of this compostable? It is a $1 trillion global industry. No, we don't have unlimited resources. No one's put in the infrastructure to recycle it. If we make this big packaging shift, I think it can be a very visual representation of literally a change in consciousness.
Welcome to the Be Curious podcast, the podcast that champions solutions to some of the world's biggest problems. I'm your host, Louise Houghton, and in each episode, we get curious about a different subject, from the clothes we wear and the food we eat to overflowing landfills and ocean plastic. All of our guests have brilliant minds and innovative ideas that allow us to lead a more sustainable, conscious, and pollutant-free life. And the best part is, this podcast isn't just about listening. It's about building a community and connecting like-minded individuals who are curious about alternatives that will enhance their lives and the longevity of the planet. And if you're curious already and you want to win some of the sustainable products and services gifted to you from our guests on the show, then just head over to our Instagram for more information. You can find out how to enter at becurious_podcast. Today, we're getting curious about packaging. Every single thing that we own has been packaged at some point along the line, and the energy and the resources used to make that packaging is astronomical. Worse still, nearly 50% of plastic waste actually comes from packaging. But there are solutions. So joining us from North Carolina is the president of Atlantic Packaging and one of the founders of A New Earth Project, Wes Carter. Wes, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
I'm so excited for this episode because there aren't many people out there who've gotten curious about packaging before. But when you dive into it, there is just so much to talk about. Before we get into the environmental impact of packaging, though, do you want to tell us a little bit briefly about the family business and how it came to be what it is today?
Sure. I would love to. So Atlantic Packaging, the company that I'm the president of today, we are almost 80 years in business. My grandfather started the company in 1946. We actually began as a weekly newspaper of all things. Quick little story about my grandfather. He was the first kid in the history of his high school to go to college. When he got out of school, his dream in life was to start his own newspaper, and that's exactly what he did. Initially, he was just reporting on tobacco farming news because here in the Southeast, that was about the only industry we had back then. But pretty quickly, my grandfather became aware that the Ku Klux Klan was really active in his community. And they were doing all the things you've read about in the history books. I mean, they were pulling people out of their homes. They were doing cross burnings and motorcades. And he took it upon himself to fight the Klan with his newspaper. Pretty harrowing thing for him and his family. They threatened to kill him and kidnap his children and burn down his house. But my grandfather never relented. And eventually his editorials got picked up by larger newspapers, and the FBI finally contacted him and said, "We need your help to infiltrate the Klan," which is exactly what they did. They arrested over 300 Klansmen, including the Grand Dragon of the Carolinas, Ku Klux Klan. And that really broke their back. They were never the same organization in the Southeast. And my grandfather won a Pulitzer Prize for meritorious public service in 1952. And he was the first weekly newspaper to ever win a Pulitzer. That's a very quick version of that story. But it's I like to tell that. Yeah, I like to start off, you know, anytime I'm introducing Atlantic with that foundational story, because my grandfather's fight against the Klan and the Pulitzer Prize, it really set the tone for our organization. You know, my grandfather had a really strong moral compass, and he felt like business could be an incredible avenue for change in the world. And he used the little newspaper that he founded to do something truly good. And a lot of the work that we're doing today as a large packaging company, we still try to channel that spirit, you know, that you know, a packaging company or any other company can have a soul, can have a moral compass. And well, the linkage from a newspaper to a packaging company is the last little piece that I'll throw in so the listeners understand how that happened. Because a lot of people are like, "That's a great story. Really cool. How the heck did you become a packaging company from a newspaper?" In those days, if you were in the newspaper business, you were also in the paper supply business. And so the second part of my grandfather's career was selling a lot of paper supplies to the textile and apparel industry that began migrating from the Northeast to the Southeast. And our packaging business just sort of started to grow up around this apparel industry that was establishing itself in the Southeast. And then my father, Rusty, who is our CEO today, came on in the early 70s, wasn't much into the newspaper, but really liked the packaging business and really grew our business from there. So today, Atlantic is the largest privately held industrial packaging company in North America. We sell packaging materials and equipment to pretty much every industry vertical: food, beverage, building products, e-commerce, automotive, aerospace. Yeah, that's who we are. So,
and when was it you started to question the methods that you were using and decide that you wanted to make a change?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, today, if you listen to me at all, I mean, sustainability is typically on the tip of my tongue. And it is a real passion for me personally. It's a real passion for our organization. But it wasn't always that way. You know, in the early part of my career, I was just focused on learning how to run a business and how to sell packaging.
Have you always worked for the family business?
Almost always. I was sweeping floors when I was 14 and did a lot of summer work in the warehouse. But when I got out of school, I moved to Park City, Utah, and I worked in the ski and snowboarding industry for a few years, and did sort of some of those, you know, early adulthood, you know, fun jobs. But I always really loved the outdoor industry, and I didn't know it at the time, but that experience in the outdoor industry had a pretty big impact on me that would come full circle, when I was about 40 years old.
Makes sense that you would want to preserve the outdoors then.
Right. It's like that old adage, you know, you protect what you love. And especially about 10 or 12 years ago, I just started noticing that plastic pollution in particular was becoming way more common. I was seeing it out there in the lineup when I was surfing. You know, routinely when we were fishing offshore, we were catching plastic bags with our lures. And that never happened when I was 20 years old. And at one moment, there was just sort of a realization that a lot of these environmental problems are being created by the supply chain that we're a part of. And I felt like, based on who our organization was and who our customers were, which were some of the largest consumer products companies and retail brands in the world, if we really committed ourselves to sustainability and were more of a vehicle for change, like if we could support our customers' desires to make these shifts and help them make these shifts effectively and economically, I figured we could have a pretty big impact.
Was it hard to convince your father and to do that?
I'm glad he's not sitting here beside me. I think initially there was some hesitation because in order to make the shift, I had to, and our organization and leadership, we had to be somewhat reflective, and we also had to call out our industry. You know, like I like to say, I felt like our industry had an intentional blind spot around plastic pollution in particular. You know, like it wasn't that it was a secret, you know, it's out there. It was pretty obvious. You could see it, but no one in our industry was talking about it much. And there wasn't a lot of strong commitments to fixing the problem. And that just did not sit well with me. I was like, I can't have that as my legacy,
yeah.
You know, is ignoring the unintended consequences of progress, which I really believe plastic pollution is.
Yeah, and I think people just don't really even think about the packaging though in general, because, you know, you might sort of know some basic form of it. You order a bottle of shampoo, it comes to you in plastic, and then it comes in a box as well. And aside from the actual plastic bottle that you're throwing away at the end of its usage, you never really think further beyond that and all of the packaging and the manufacturing and how it actually even got to that last mile. So there's just so many stages, isn't there?
There's so many stages. And to your point, for most, you know, normal, regular people, packaging is sort of a means to an end, you know, like people don't pay a lot of attention to it, you know? And that is part of the reason that we have a waste crisis, you know, that we have as a culture, you know, really since the Industrial Revolution, have operated on this linear form of the materials economy, where we extract products from the ground, You know, we take resources out of the ground, we make a product, and what we don't use is waste that we bury back in the ground. It's a very linear form of operation. And it works pretty well if you're under the illusion that we have unlimited resources. And that's how we've operated for the last 100 years. But over the last 20 or 30 years, especially over the last 10 or 15, you know, the chickens have come home to roost. I mean, we're starting to see that, no, we don't have unlimited resources. And there is a lot of unintended negative consequences of creating all this waste, especially like plastic type waste, which doesn't break down. And all of it, you know, it's like all of a sudden our eyes are being opened to the massive negative impact that our system of the materials economy has created. And, you know, it would be easy maybe to ignore that and just to, as a packaging company, just to keep, you know, just to keep making widgets. But it's a moral and ethical question for me. And I do back to the question about my father, I think what I had to articulate, not just to my father, but also to our leadership and to the greater company, is that, like, if we do this really well, we can create a very strong value proposition around sustainable packaging, and we can facilitate our customers' needs and desires. And ultimately, in business, anytime you can innovate, you can, you know, grow your top line. I mean, like, innovation is what drives sales. And I felt like sustainability and sustainable packaging potentially could be an incredible catalyst for innovating in our industry. And that's really what we leaned into.
Do you know actually how much packaging, say that bottle of shampoo I mentioned before, would actually have along its journey?
Well, you know, the specific amount of packaging per product is a little difficult number to land on. But, you know, just to give, you know, folks, I mean, it is a $1 trillion global industry. I mean, the packaging industry is massive, which is kind of funny because people don't even really consider it. But, you know, you think about like trade shows, the packaging trade show that occurs every year, it's in Chicago one year, in Vegas the next year, is one of the largest trade shows in North America is packaging. And that, I think that's probably shocking to most people. But it is a tremendous industry. And if you just consider all the goods that you receive, you know, throughout your day are all packaged.
Especially nowadays, I think. You know, and think maybe things changed in COVID where everybody just got used to things being much more convenient and having them delivered. And that's kind of a habit that just hasn't faded afterwards. People don't want to go 2 blocks to the store anymore.
I've thought a lot about COVID, you know, and at least from a packaging perspective and from the waste crisis perspective, the one silver lining that was really obvious to me is because we had this sort of intersection where you had a global pandemic and everyone went home for 2 years that intersected with the trajectory of technology where you could literally order anything you needed from your cell phone to your house. And so everyday Americans, everyday global citizens got more packaging to their houses than in under any other possible scenario. And so it did create a level of awareness where regular people were starting to go, what do I do with all this stuff? Do we really need this much packaging? What's recyclable? What's not? Is any of this compostable? Like, and
it's so true. You got the smallest product in a giant box or something like that. So I think people were sort of fighting back against big corporations like Amazon, for example, and saying, you know, why is this in such a big box?
And that momentum and that awareness ultimately drives consumer behavior. And if you're a retail brand or a consumer products company, the thing you respond to the most is consumer demand. And all of a sudden, consumers are saying, we don't like all this single-use plastic. We don't like all this wasted packaging, you know? And they're putting pressure on their brands. And we like to say today, sustainability truly is a brand attribute. Your customers, if you're an e-commerce retail brand, are at least in part judging you ethically on how you package your products. And so if we can continue that trajectory where packaging really is seen as a brand attribute, you know, then to me, that is the greatest catalyst we have for a major shift.
And before you came on board, what kind of packaging, what was the packaging actually made of?
you know, plastic packaging is very, very dominant, even still today. I mean, yes, we are making some shifts and some changes, but, you know, if you look at packaging as a whole, I mean, plastic packaging is still very dominant, but, you know, it's for good reason. First of all, there's been about $1 trillion invested in the development of plastic over the last 50 years. And that's one thing I try to explain to people. Yeah, we're working on alternatives, but there's been $1 trillion invested in traditional plastic. There's been $2 invested in all this new stuff. So, you know, we're not going to just snap our fingers and have alternatives with the level of investment that's gone into these products. And because of that investment, and honestly, because of sort of myopic ways of thinking, where we weren't acknowledging the potential downfalls of plastic, you know, we just have it in a lot of applications. Plastic is incredibly adaptable. It can be utilized in so many different ways. So it's become ubiquitous. It's also really cheap,
yeah.
You know, and so when you have a very adaptable product that's super inexpensive and it actually is highly functional too, plastic works really, really well.
But it's not recyclable.
There is a lot of plastic that is actually technically recyclable. No one's put in the infrastructure to recycle it. There are a lot of areas where we're utilizing plastic packaging today because it is so efficient. Like we could never find another material that would be nearly as efficient. So it's less about replacing the plastic and it's more about how do we create a closed loop system to capture that plastic and recycle it really effectively and keep it in circulation.
Do we manage to do that with cardboard in a better way where we have that bit more of a closed loop system, as you mentioned?
We absolutely do. You know, the paper industry has been around a long time. You know, we've been making paper in this country for, you know, several hundred years. And one of the reasons that we have worked really diligently to transition a lot of single-use plastic products, especially ones that are direct-to-consumer, like stuff that's going into a parcel package from like Amazon or other e-commerce retailers to your home, we've tried to transition a lot of that packaging, things like inflatable air pillows and bubble wrap and foam, to paper forms of cushioning and blocking and bracing. Because paper is so recyclable. Every blue bin program in America takes paper.
But then what about all of the trees that are being cut down to provide this paper?
That's another area that we have to be cognizant of. You know, when we're looking at feedstocks for packaging, and we talk a lot about ethical feedstocks, it's ultimately important that we're acknowledging the feedstocks and the environmental impact of those feedstocks. You know, one of the reasons I have liked paper is because paper is so recyclable, the demand for recycled paper fiber is tremendous. And so because there's an economic demand for recycled fiber, you know, all the infrastructure, all the recycling infrastructure, the demand, it's the reason the blue bin programs exist. One thing a lot of people don't realize is a lot of the recycling centers in your geography, you know, where your blue bins go, are owned by paper companies. The paper companies own the recycling centers because they want the paper fiber. So again, when we have applications where paper will work, it's a great opportunity to create greater circularity because the infrastructure already exists. To your question, though, does it mean that I think paper is the end all be all? No, I don't. I mean, like, would I love it if we could create packaging from something that where we didn't have to cut down trees? Sure. You know, and we're working on, you know, feedstocks. The good thing is, though, trees are a renewable resource. And we do have pretty robust standards for sustainably managing forests. And we've been doing that for decades and decades and decades. So we try to only source paper from sustainably managed forests, you know, and their certifications. FSC and SFI are two certifications that we always look for. And more companies that are utilizing paper packaging are demanding paper from sustainably managed forests. So that is a move in the right direction. But, you know, we always have to acknowledge that, you know, there is no free lunch. You know, there, you know, if we are going to use materials that require raw materials and feedstocks, you know, there's going to be an impact. And we're just trying to mitigate that impact as much as possible.
And also, of course, all the products need packaging in some way. You can't ship something without it. So how did you come up with the material that you use? And what was the idea that made you develop it into what it is today?
For a lot of B2B packaging, it's not so much that we're trying to replace the current materials. What we're trying to do is partner with customers to recover the material after it's utilized and recycle it. One of the products that we sell a lot of is plastic stretch film. Stretch film is that clear film that wraps around pallets. It's the primary packaging device for goods shipped all over the world, and it's radically efficient. I mean, we can wrap a 5,000-pound load of goods with 6 ounces of film.
But you can recycle that?
But we can recycle it. So we recently launched a program with Coca-Cola where we are piloting, collecting all their used stretch film. We invested several million dollars at Atlantic in recycling equipment where we're bringing all that used product in, cutting it and scrapping it into flake, and then melting it and creating new resin that goes back into stretch film. So that's a really viable option today for that type of packaging.
I saw that on your Instagram, actually. And it ends up looking like rice grains or something before it's then made into the plastic again.
Well, and the cool thing is, because we are collecting only one type of plastic stretch film, we can create a really tight closed loop and make really high quality pellets, you know, as opposed to where you run into a lot of problems where you have all this mixed plastic with a lot of contamination. And when you hear, folks out there saying, well, recycling's broken, recycling doesn't work, you know, part of what they're referencing is the contamination factors. So where we can create more dedicated lanes where we don't have contamination, recycling works pretty darn well.
So that's the business to business, which makes a lot of sense. But then if you look at the business to consumer, say, for example, the surfboards that I saw that you've been advertising this packaging for as well, or somebody was doing a report on it, this kind of cardboard is more of a wave form to it, which is interesting. Can you tell us a bit more about that and the reason the design came about?
So when we think about plastic pollution, like I always like to go to the root source, you know, and we know most of the plastic pollution is direct to consumer packaging. And so what we've tried to do is look at all these applications, surfboards being one of them, and saying, all right, this application today is dominated by single-use plastic. Can we innovate and create new materials and new ways of utilizing those materials to protect these products and eliminate single-use plastic? So with surfboard packaging, the product that we incorporated was something called SusWrap. It was actually developed in the 1950s, believe it or not, to package windshields. So like car manufacturers were using this packaging to wrap the edges of a heavy windshield and slide it into a box for shipping. And when we saw that, you know, because we were exploring all these different options for what could we, you know, how could we protect a surfboard without using bubble wrap and foam? And, you know, somebody on our team said, this product's kind of cool that was used for windshields. This could probably work for a fiberglass surfboard. And we had to do some modifications and, and then we had to add in some other types of packaging to keep it all adhered. And we had to come up with a custom box size to make it all work. But we, at our Packaging Solution Center in Charlotte, North Carolina, we did that innovation work for 4 or 5 months and finally came up with a brand new system.
Isn't that crazy that 70 years ago, there was actually an idea out there that was much more sustainable than what it came to be today? And yet I find this with so many conversations that we're having is actually kind of going back in time almost to the way that they used to grow crops or the way that we used to make clothes, you know, that was actually a lot more sustainable than it is in today's world.
Yeah, I mean, from a philosophical and even of a spiritual perspective, I mean, I do think a lot of what we need to do is remember. I mean, there, you know, the ideas of closed loops and balance and being in harmony with nature, these are not things that humans haven't ever understood. There's a lot of cultures all over the planet that have understood that abundance in life comes from balance with the natural world. And we have just forgotten that. And we are, you know, reaping what we've sowed. So yes, I mean, we spend a lot of time reflecting on the way things used to be done. I mean, it wasn't that long ago where a lot of, you know, things like milk were delivered in reusable containers to your house. And, you know, you hear a lot of people, especially at the state legislation level, that are looking at EPR laws talking about refill and reuse. Well, refill and reuse is not new. It's old. You know, we just have to recreate it for the modern world.
So true.
The other thing that we're working really diligently on that you may have seen is this idea of alternative materials. You know, are there organic feedstocks that we could utilize to make plastic-like material? You know, like one of the things I'm really excited about is seaweed. There's a lot of things to like about seaweed. It, first of all, does not take arid land to grow, you know, so you're not going to impact food source. It grows way faster than trees. And as it's growing, it's really regenerative for coastal areas. It's really good for, and so if you could sustainably grow seaweed, we already know that we can take that material and turn it into film, clear film. We're not doing it at scale. You know, there's a lot of performance criteria that we have to figure out and learn and develop, but we have a feedstock that's organic in nature that looks like it could replace a lot of plastic, and the products would still be clear, translucent film with barrier properties potentially. And so that really is where I see the most excitement and opportunities for innovation is instead of using natural gas and oil as fossil fuels, basically as our feedstock for plastics, maybe it's not about completely eliminating plastics. It's just about creating them from organic materials that'll break down.
Are you doing all of this R&D at your center in North Carolina?
We are, and it is my great passion. I love it so much because it feels like every day we have a breakthrough, you know, and we're working with a lot of really interesting technology companies that aren't your typical packaging companies. You know, a lot of the sustainable technology is coming out of, you know, these small startup, a lot of them are venture funded organizations with a lot of really smart, you know, brilliant young people that are super passionate about sustainability, and they're entering our industry, which is new. I like to say, you know, for the first time ever, we got people trying to make packaging sexy, and that is really hard to do, but it's starting to happen. And, you know, it's why I get the pleasure of being on podcasts like this and talking about packaging, because it really, packaging can be very symbolic. I mean, because it is so ubiquitous, because every human being comes in contact with it every day. If we make this big packaging shift, I think it can be a very visual representation of literally a change in consciousness for human beings. And so this whole sustainable revolution and shift to me is very spiritual in nature.
That makes a lot of sense to me. And what kind of reductions are actually made from the work that you're doing?
You know, one of the things that we focus on first and foremost is what we call packaging optimization, which is kind of a fancy way of saying use less. In almost every application, the first thing that we are analyzing is how can we reduce the overall packaging footprint. And, you know, oftentimes, especially with some of these newer materials, even paper in many cases is more expensive than the plastic alternative. So in order to offset the cost of more expensive material, we're always trying to right size. You know, like we don't want that Amazon box to show up at your house that's got, you know, this much material in it and 47, you know, pounds of plastic in it. You know, we're trying to right size as much as we possibly can to eliminate all that waste. And it all depends on the application. There's no magic number, but, you know, 10, 15, 20% are typical targets for overall reduction. And in most cases, those reductions can offset the increased cost of some of these newer materials.
And you mentioned, of course, the B2B recycling, but does that happen from the consumer as well? I know you have this initiative, which is the PCR, the post-consumer recycling program.
We're trying to do recycling in a very dedicated way for really specific products that we feel like where we can bring a lot of impact in these closed loops. And a lot of that is in B2B. It's very difficult for us to be a part of closing the loop on direct-to-consumer packaging because we're so reliant on Blue Bin programs. You know, so where we feel like we can bring the most value is trying to migrate away from plastic to either paper products that we know, like I mentioned earlier, the infrastructure exists to recycle. If you put paper in your Blue Bin, the likelihood that it gets recycled is super high. The area that I think has the most promise and also the most amount of obstacles is direct food contact. When you're talking about fresh protein and fresh produce, those are areas that are going to take a ton of innovation because of all the food safety issues and shelf life issues. And how Atlantic will participate in closing those loops remains to be seen. But I'm pretty bullish on compostable packaging in a lot of those applications, and that's another area we're innovating as well.
What other services do you offer at the center then?
So we also do a lot in packaging automation. So we're always looking to incorporate technology to help support packaging optimization. And the great thing about the packaging optimization, utilizing packaging technology and the use less model is there's almost always a cost savings associated with it. And I think that's the thing that most regular people, it's important to understand is, you know, there are times where companies are willing to pay more for sustainability, and that's becoming a bigger and bigger, you know, calculus when large organizations are considering their packaging. But ultimately, if we can find ways to increase efficiency, reduce downtime, you know, we can impact the speed with which companies adopt sustainability in a much greater way. So we've invested a lot in that side of our business. So when you come to our Packaging Solution Center, you're not only going to see us doing a lot of development of new materials and coming up with new configurations of how to utilize packaging, but we're also super invested in packaging technology as a part of that overall ecosystem to drive efficiency.
And what can the governments do to support this movement and shift?
Oh, a lot. And they can do a lot more. One of the biggest challenges to migrating from a lot of these single-use plastic products to more sustainable alternatives is the price point. And as we introduce these new alternative materials, initially, there's just no volume, you know, and so the price points are always going to be a bit higher. And so California passed Senate Bill 54 last year, which is one of the largest EPR bills ever passed in the world. And basically, EPR says we are going to put fees on packaging for two reasons. One, we want to invest in recycling and composting infrastructure. And these fees that we collect on packaging are going to fund upgrading to best in class, you know, most sophisticated recycling and composting infrastructure. The other purpose is to take the most problematic types of packaging, put higher fees on those to help drive consumer products companies and retail brands to take a harder look at the alternatives. It sort of evens the playing field from a price point perspective. Like a good example, like EPS foam, what most people would call styrofoam, like a white styrofoam cooler, or if you get an appliance or a television, that white crumbly foam, that stuff is almost impossible to recycle. And if it ends up in the environment, it breaks down virtually never. You know, so it's sort of public enemy number one from a sustainability perspective. And most EPR laws put really big fees on that type of foam.
Which is interesting because sometimes it's like a cheap takeout, you know, that will actually give you the food in it. Styrofoam.
Even a styrofoam cup. I mean, I know a lot of people that love to drink coffee out of a styrofoam cup because it does insulate really, really well, better than paper. But, you know, there are times where we as human beings are going to have to be willing to sacrifice a little convenience and a little cost for the greater good. And that really is the shift that has to happen. I mean, I like to say that in the packaging industry, and I think in a lot of industries, we have worshiped the altar of cost and convenience, really to our detriment. And there has to be another calculus when we're determining the types of materials that we utilize beyond cost and convenience.
I love that you've made it your mission within your business to really drive sustainability forward. And I know that you're doing a lot of talks as well. You mentioned that you're doing podcasts, but you're also doing conferences and speaker gigs and things like that. Are you also trying to stand up there and change legislation yourself?
We are. We don't have all the answers, and I certainly don't claim to have all the answers. We are an 80-year-old packaging company that supports the packaging needs of the largest consumer products companies and retail brands in the world. And I think it's really important that policymakers in particular have the voice of our industry. We also are pretty unique in that we are primarily a packaging distributor, you know, so we're not manufacturing a lot of packaging. We do a little bit, but a lot of what we do is we're buying packaging from the manufacturers and then selling it to the users. And so we operate as a distribution company, as a consulting company. The advantage to that is I'm not married to any technology. I can pivot really quickly. If you're a company that has extruders and you're making plastic packaging, it's pretty hard for you to pivot because you have so much embedded capital in your manufacturing infrastructure. So as a packaging distributor, our ability to pivot gives us a pretty unique ability to bring sustainable innovations to the marketplace. But I care deeply about the legacy of our organization. I care deeply about the world and the environment that we're leaving to future generations. And I'm pretty public about that. And I think most people see that it's authentic. And I believe we need, you know, authentic voices from the supply chain that really care about these issues. And more we're seeing major brands that have the same passion for this that we do.
I wonder as well, you mentioned like future generations. I wonder if it's going to take those future generations kind of getting to the C-level positions in order to kind of see more change happening. Because they've grown up in a world where climate change and environmental issues have been so prominent. And so we are seeing a younger generation really driving all of these things forward. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think it's going to just take time?
Consumer demand will drive behavior more than any other single thing, more than legislation. I mean,
but that's what I mean. Like the younger generations are the ones saying, no, we don't want this anymore.
Exactly. And so one of the things that we point out to a lot of companies that we work with, all the recent surveys of people under 40 show that demographic values sustainability by like 85%. It's freaking everybody. And so if you're a consumer products company and you're looking at one of the largest buying demographics in the world, and that buying demographic values anything by 85%, you're going to respond to that, you know? And so it's one of the things we continue to try to activate. These young people are getting older all the time. And so that demographic that may 10 years ago have been people under 25, today is people under 40. And 10 years from now, it'll be people under 55. You know, like it's becoming more and more ubiquitous that all human beings are saying this matters. And so it's also one of the reasons I'm so bullish on sustainability, just from a sheer business perspective. It's where we're going.
I've been seeing you do more philanthropic work as well with schools, for example, coming on tours of your factory.
I love working with young people. I do a lot of presentations at schools. I've done some at colleges, but I've also done some for second graders. And I certainly modulate the content based on the audience. But, you know, again, it's super fun to engage with young people because they tend to care a lot.
And tell me a bit more about a new Earth project, because that's something that you've been starting alongside of Atlantic Packaging.
Yeah, a new Earth project has been a labor of love. It's certainly taken on a life of its own. If you'd have told me 3 or 4 years ago that this is where it would have ended up, I never would have believed you. And I think it has been a real testament to the passion of young people and outdoor people. But the way it began, like I said, I've been a lifelong surfer, and a friend of mine said, you know, Wes, I have always thought that surfing in particular was a cultural phenomenon that had far greater influence than people realize. And he said, I really think there's an opportunity for you to partner with the surfing industry around sustainability. And I want to connect you to some friends of mine on the North Shore of Oahu. And so he did that. I got connected with a guy named Peter King, who is a lifelong surf photographer on the North Shore, really connected to the professional surfing community there. And we sort of hatched up this idea that the sustainable packaging revolution should be awesome. Like, this should be something that we all celebrate. And what if we asked the surfing industry and that vertical to really embrace sustainable packaging, help us market it, you know, utilize the professional athletes that are super compelling to talk about it, and see if we could, like I mentioned earlier, create sexy packaging, you know? And like, we felt like having people like Kai Lenny and Kelly Slater and Carissa Moore endorsing packaging could have a real impact. And then it sort of was like, well, maybe we'll start with surfing, and then let's reach out to other outdoor, you know, industry. You know, let's talk to Patagonia. Let's talk to Burton Snowboards. Let's talk to Atomic Skis. Let's talk to Specialized Mountain Bikes, you know, and let's engage with the Rod and Gun, you know, with Bass Pro Shop and Cabela's and Orvis and people like that. Not because the outdoor industry was this massive packaging vertical, but because it was such an amazing place to tell stories and elicit passion. And so this whole initiative, I coined a New Earth Project, and we started off by creating that surfboard shipping system. And instead of just creating a packaging system for surfboards, we created a documentary series while we did the development. And so we shot videos on the North Shore of Oahu with shapers and with pro surfers. And we also shot parts of it at our solution center where we're developing the packaging. Again, just to try to say to the world, like, this can be awesome. You know, like, this can be really fun and really engaging. And it really has kind of worked. And now a New Earth Project is the sustainability initiative of Atlantic Packaging. It really is our branding and marketing arm. And we now have a whole line of New Earth approved packaging, packaging supplies for a healthy planet. And we are selling those type of materials and developing new materials for all kinds of industries today. So we have a lot of just traditional packaging customers buying New Earth approved packaging. And
that was going to be my next question, is how do the two companies sort of support one another? But you answered it already.
Yeah, I mean, the New Earth Project is not a separate company. It's an initiative that lives embedded in Atlantic. But, you know, storytelling and media, just like what we're doing right now, to me is one of the most radical tools we've ever had in the history of human beings. I mean, in order to solve these big global problems, we have to be able to collaborate globally. And today, we have the ability to do that visually in real time. I mean, it's a radical tool. And we hear a lot about the ills of social media and things like that. But to me, media used for good and for global collaboration is an incredible tool. And we've never had this opportunity in the history of human beings. And so it's the reason that we really lean into social media and storytelling and docuseries, because we think it elicits passion.
You do it very well from what I've seen.
I don't do it all that well. I have a ton of help. I have an incredible team of people at Atlantic and at a New Earth Project that are great storytellers. And our tagline for a New Earth Project is, we do this together, because ultimately this is not supposed to be about Atlantic Packaging, or certainly not about Wes Carter. It really is about all of us bringing our best efforts and our unique talents together and harmonizing those talents for a real common good. And again, to me, that common good is healthy life. You know, like, let's all make decisions every single day that are in the direction of healthy life. And I think if we do that in time, we can transform this planet.
Before we close up today, then, what kind of tips do you have for any of our listeners out there who are just wanting to reduce their own waste?
Call me. And, you know, ultimately, I would tell companies that the first step really is doing a sincere and dedicated audit of what you're currently doing. You know, like, get very intellectual about every single area of your business. And we do a lot of this internally, not even related to packaging, to just do waste audits. I mean, we do energy audits pretty regularly to see where are we wasting energy and are there upgrades to some of our equipment that could impact our energy output. You know, we like to say, you know, you can't control what you don't measure. So we're always out there trying to measure things. And then once we have a baseline, we can improve from that baseline. But I always encourage companies as a first step, look, you know, do an audit, whether it's a packaging audit with Atlantic Packaging or it's a, you know, energy audit with a third party. Those are always good places to start. And what we've typically found is you're going to find low hanging fruit. There's always going to be two or three areas that are like, well, hell, these are easy, you know, and then the more difficult ones, you engage with really sophisticated partners to help you advance sustainability and efficiency in those areas too.
Thank you for sharing that. Are there any other things that you want to share with regards to plans moving forward?
Again, we're super committed to what we're doing. We can't do it alone. We need organizations across the supply chain that really buy into this and are really invested in the future of sustainability. I think innovation drives everything with businesses. The most innovative companies in the world are typically the healthiest companies in the world. And transitioning our materials economy to more sustainable, healthier alternatives is begging for innovation. And so we need it across the supply chain. I mean, we need innovation on the agriculture side. We need innovation on the recycling side. We need innovation on the development side. We need, you know, innovation on the human health components of all of this. And ultimately, I think the companies that do that well will be the leaders of the future economy.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing all this. It's been such a pleasure to unwrap, pun intended, all of this stuff with you today. If people want to find out more about what you're doing, where can they go? Is Instagram the best or is the website better?
Instagram's a good spot. You know, you can go to at A New Earth Project on Instagram. I'm Wes M. Carter. So, but our New Earth Project Instagram feed is very regularly updated. You can also follow Atlantic Packaging or A New Earth Project on LinkedIn. We have a lot of more like business specific stuff on the LinkedIn vertical. And if you're just interested in seeing our catalog of sustainable packaging, go to anewearthproject.com. We have a shop on there. Our documentary series is there as well. And we got a lot of stuff in the hopper. I mean, we're working on some pretty cool stuff that will be coming out hopefully in the next year to continue to do this storytelling work around new and alternative materials.
All right, we look forward to seeing that. And we'll make sure we put all of those links in the show notes as well. Thank you so much for your time, Wes. It's been such a pleasure to have you on. And as Wes mentioned, Instagram is a great place to see a lot of the content that he's been doing with Atlantic Packaging and A New Earth Project. And Instagram is also where you can go if you want to find out about the many gifts that we've got on the Be Curious podcast. So just head over there to enter our monthly giveaways. That's all we have time for today. But until next time, my name is Louise Houghton and stay curious, guys. Thanks so much, Wes.
Thank you, Louise.